Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Andrew Smith has a report about a new U.S. promise to Vietnam to clean up a chemical contamination from the Vietnam War. Later, Brian Lin looks back at the year in science. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Andrew Smith.
The United States announced a contract earlier this month worth up to $29 million to clean a chemical contamination in Vietnam. The Bien Hoa Air Base in southern Vietnam is contaminated with dioxin from U.S. military actions during the Vietnam War. American forces used the herbicide Agent Orange widely during the conflict. Dioxin is one of the poisonous chemicals in Agent Orange. The announcement of the contract is the most recent attempt to show cooperation between the two countries. It comes at the 50-year anniversary of the so-called Christmas bombings. In December 1972, U.S. forces dropped 20,000 tons of bombs on the cities of Hanoi and Haiphong. The conflict ended in 1975. The nations now work together on trade issues, climate change, and the legacies of the war. However, disagreements remain. This announcement represents the United States' commitment to our partnership with Vietnam, said Aller Grubbs, director of the U.S. Agency for International Development's USAID, Vietnam office. The agency said it finished a similar project in 2018 to clean up Agent Orange and other chemicals around Da Nang in central Vietnam. It said Bien Hoa would require dealing with four times as much soil as the Da Nang project. Agent Orange is believed to be a cause of birth defects, cancers, and skin disease, among other things. Both the U.S. and Vietnamese governments are working on the cleanup across the country. The project is estimated to last more than 10 years at a cost of about $450 million. Washington said it expects to spend $300 million overall and has put more than $163 million towards the cleanup so far. While the two countries have made progress working together, the U.S. has expressed worry about some issues. It wants Vietnam to announce support for freedom of speech and to release political prisoners. Vietnam, however, denies it has any such prisoners. U.S. Secretary of State Antony J. Blinken said December 2nd that Vietnam would be put on a special watch list for practicing or allowing severe violations of religious freedom, along with Algeria, the Central African Republic, and Comoros. Vietnam's Foreign Affairs Ministry did not accept being put on the watch list. Recently, Vietnam has been finalizing the legal system and the policies on religion and belief, the ministry said in response on December 15th. The ministry claimed the international community has recognized Vietnam's work on freedom of religion and beliefs. Meanwhile, the U.S. is trying to increase cooperation in areas such as environmental health and safety, USAID official Grubbs said. I'm Andrew Smith.
The American Space Agency, NASA, announced several major mission successes in 2022. Today, we look back at some of the agency's biggest developments in the past year. NASA announced in October that its experiment to crash a spacecraft into an asteroid had successfully changed the path of the orbiting object. Officials said it was the first time in history that a human action had changed the motion of a space object. NASA's DART spacecraft crashed in September into an asteroid called Dimorphos, about 11 million kilometers from Earth. Dimorphos is a small moonlet that orbits a larger asteroid named Didymos. The goal of the crash was to see how it might redirect the asteroid's path and speed. The crash reduced the object's orbital period by 32 minutes. NASA scientists had predicted a reduction of 10 minutes, so they were pleased with the test results. NASA described the crash as the world's first planetary defense test. The targeted asteroid did not present an actual threat to Earth. In July, NASA began releasing the first images captured by its James Webb Space Telescope. Officials described the Webb as the largest and most powerful science telescope ever built. The Orbiting Observatory is a large infrared telescope that builds on the work of earlier telescopes, such as the Hubble and Spitzer. But the Webb is designed to gather more data and explore parts of space never observed before. NASA praised the work of the Webb development team and said the telescope had begun a new era in astronomy. In November, scientists said the Webb had also identified bright early galaxies for the first time. One of the galaxies might have formed only 350 million years after the Big Bang, the event that explains the beginning of the universe. In November, NASA launched its Space Launch System, or SLS, rocket, which U.S. officials have called the most powerful rocket ever built. The SLS rocket carried the Orion spacecraft, or capsule, into space. The goal was to carry out an uncrewed test mission to fly around the moon. The mission was part of the space agency's Artemis program, which aims to land Americans on the moon by the mid-2020s. During a news conference earlier this month, NASA officials said they were pleased with how Orion and its systems had performed during the mission. No major problems were reported. NASA said Orion had traveled more than 2.2 million kilometers during the test mission. The capsule parachuted into the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Southern California on December 11th and was safely recovered. The goal of Artemis 1 was to prepare for Artemis 2, which will include astronauts. That is to be followed by Artemis 3, which will aim to land astronauts on the moon's surface. If that goal is reached, it would be the first moon landing by astronauts since NASA's Apollo 17 mission in 1972. After a summer trip, NASA announced in October its Curiosity Explorer vehicle had reached its next exploration target on Mars. The Explorer, or rover, reached an area known as Mount Sharp. The area sits within the planet's Gale crater, which Curiosity has been exploring since landing on Mars in 2012. Mount Sharp contains a mix of rocky material and many large hills. Researchers have found past evidence that Mount Sharp contained many water systems billions of years ago. But scientists believe at some point the Martian climate grew more extreme and caused the water to dry up. Any minerals still existing in the area might provide additional evidence of severe changes to the Martian climate. Shortly after arriving in the area, Curiosity's instruments discovered many different kinds and sizes. Among the discoveries were several different salt compounds that suggest the presence of water in the past. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, Brian Lynn joins me to talk more about this week's science report. Hi, Brian. Thanks for being here.
Sure, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
This week, you looked back at some of the American Space Agency's biggest missions in 2022. It was truly a busy year for NASA. But I'm wondering, what can you tell us about any major missions NASA has planned for the upcoming year?
Well, Ashley, we learned in today's report that NASA carried out a successful test mission that involved crashing into an asteroid. And in 2023, the agency should have two more missions involving asteroids.
That sounds interesting. But NASA is not planning to crash another spacecraft into an asteroid, right?
That is correct. That won't happen again. One of the new NASA missions is called Psyche. It is a spacecraft set to launch in early October. The spacecraft will travel 3.5 years to a metal asteroid orbiting the Sun between Mars and Jupiter. NASA wants to study the asteroid because scientists believe it could have separated during violent crashes during the formation of the solar system.
Okay, and what about the other mission?
The other will be a return mission of NASA's OSIRIS-REx spacecraft. It spent more than 2 years observing an asteroid named Bennu, and in October 2020 successfully collected sample material from the asteroid. The spacecraft is now on a trip back to Earth, with NASA expecting its arrival in September of next year. And scientists say they hope the material can help them better understand how planets formed and how life began on Earth.
Thanks again, Brian, for joining me on the show today, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Ashley, and Happy New Year to you as well.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 2 years of a bitter, bloody civil war started to show their effects on both the Confederate States of the South and the Union States of the North. Both sides began to feel the pressure of the costly struggle. The South, however, felt the pressure more severely because it was weaker in troop strength and industrial strength. Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles discuss the early summer of 1863 in the American Civil War.
In 1863, the Confederate States were becoming short of supplies. Food and guns were difficult to find to keep the Confederate armies in the field. Men were also needed, more and more men. There seemed to be no end to the demand for men to fill the places left empty by dead and wounded soldiers. Many in the South were heavy of heart, and hope among them slowly started to sink. The war was tiring. Its suffering was more than they could bear. And the situation in the West made matters worse. Union armies were on the move in the states of Mississippi and Tennessee. Their successes were becoming a serious threat. They might soon win control of the whole Mississippi River. This would split the states of the Confederacy and might end its very existence. Something was needed to raise up the spirits of the South, to break the pressure of Union armies.
General Robert E. Lee believed that he had the answer, an invasion of the North. This, he felt, would throw fear into the people of the North and weaken the Union war effort. Lee had organized an army of 75,000 men at Fredericksburg, Virginia, halfway between Washington and Richmond. Lee began moving his men June 3rd. They marched northwest into the Shenandoah Valley. The valley led north to the Potomac River. Across the river was the narrow neck of western Maryland, then Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was the target. Its rich farmland produced plenty of food, enough to feed Lee's hungry army for the summer.
Standing in the way of Lee's army was a small Union force at Winchester in northern Virginia. There were only 7,000 Union soldiers, and they had no idea that the Confederate army was nearby. The Confederates easily defeated them. More than half of the Union troops were captured. The others fled. Now, there was nothing to stop Lee from marching into Pennsylvania. The huge Army of the Potomac was behind him, near Washington. The Union commander, General Hooker, had to keep the army between Lee and Washington to prevent the Confederates from seizing the national capital.
Lee's army crossed western Maryland and entered Pennsylvania. His soldiers found the Pennsylvania countryside very different from Virginia's. Virginia had been a battleground for 2 years, and the land showed it. Many of its farms had been destroyed. Its stores were empty. Pennsylvania had not been touched by the war. Its big farms were rich. Its towns and villages were full of food and goods of all kinds. The hungry, poorly clothed soldiers could not believe their eyes. This was the land of the enemy, they cried, and they could take whatever they wished. But General Lee said no. He said supplies could be taken only by Confederate supply officers. And, he said, they must pay in Confederate money for everything they took.
Lee did not want to anger these people in Pennsylvania. Many of them did not support the Union war effort. Some of the rich farmers said openly that they did not care who won the war. They said they only wanted to be left alone. Lee was sure that many in the North felt the same way. There had been signs that people were growing tired of the war. Coal miners in eastern Pennsylvania had shown their feelings toward the war a few months earlier. They rose up against a new law drafting men into the Union Army. The miners did not want to fight. They refused to join the army. They rioted and attacked officials who tried to take them. Soldiers were sent to the mining areas to put down the riots.
Farmers in nearby Ohio also rebelled against the draft law. They refused to be drafted. Instead, they took guns and battled soldiers who came to arrest them. Feelings against the war were growing stronger, not only in Pennsylvania and Ohio, but also in several other farm states of the North. These areas saw a growing support for a peace party, a political party opposed to the war. Leaders of this movement were Democrats called Copperheads. They got this name because they wore on their coats a copper penny with the head of an Indian.
The chief Copperhead was a former Ohio congressman. His name was Clement Vallandigham. As a member of Congress, Vallandigham criticized the war and the Republicans. He told them, "The war for the Union is, in your hands, a most bloody and costly failure. War for the Union was abandoned, and war for the Negro was openly begun with stronger effort than before.
With what success? Vallandigham asked. Let the dead at Fredericksburg and Vicksburg answer. Vallandigham said he wanted peace, and he wanted it immediately. He offered a simple program. Stop the fighting. Make a ceasefire. And let some friendly foreign nation negotiate peace between North and South.
After he lost his seat in Congress, Vallandigham opened a campaign to become governor of Ohio. He traveled all across the state, speaking out against the war. He said Republicans did not want peace. He said they wanted to fight until every black man was free. The Union military commander for Ohio was General Ambrose Burnside, a former commander of the Army of the Potomac. After losing the Battle of Fredericksburg, Lincoln removed Burnside as Army commander and sent him to Ohio. Burnside was worried. Too many people in Ohio opposed the war. He believed that much of what was being said and done in Ohio was close to the crime of treason.
Burnside announced several new measures to quiet the opponents of the war. One of these orders limited the right of citizens to criticize government military policy. Another declared that statements of support for the enemy would be punished as treason. Vallandigham refused to recognize Burnside's right to give such orders to civilians. On May 1st, he made a campaign speech to a big crowd at Mount Vernon, Ohio. He denounced Burnside's orders and spoke of the president as King Lincoln. Vallandigham claimed that Lincoln was using the war to become a dictator. He said Lincoln did not want peace, that the president had rejected peace offers from the South. Once again, he said the war was not a struggle for the Union, but a fight to free the slaves of the South. And he said, men of Ohio, who let themselves be drafted into the Union Army, were no better than slaves themselves.
Burnside had sent several Army officers to listen to the speech. When they reported what Vallandigham said, Burnside ordered his arrest. Without question, the man had violated the general's orders. Late the next night, soldiers went to Vallandigham's home in Dayton. They knocked on the door and said they had come to arrest him. Vallandigham called for help and refused to let the soldiers enter. They broke down the door, seized him, and took him to a military prison in Cincinnati. A few days later, Vallandigham went on trial before a military court in Cincinnati. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.